from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, President Obama's messages to colleges and universities last week is that perpetual tuition hikes are no longer an option. The president promised to reward colleges and universities if they keep tuition from increasing. And if tuition does go up, he told college administrators the funding they get from taxpayers each year will go down. That's all next as we explore the president's proposal on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Friday, President Obama proposed a plan that would see the federal government taking the lead in rewarding colleges and universities that keep tuition down and punishing those that don't. And this proposed carrot-and-stick tuition plan approach was coupled with ideas relevant to performance-based funding. We look into the president's proposal in this morning's opening Forum Hour and get reaction and analysis. And the first thing we're going to do is go to Washington and welcome Martha Cantor, who is Undersecretary of Education in the U.S. Department of Education. Secretary Cantor, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Actually, it's good afternoon in Washington. I'm glad to have you. We should mention, in light of the fact that tuition just this past year, over the course of the year, has gone up about 8.3% over universities and colleges. Can you give us a kind of succinct outline of what the president is proposing other than the carrot and stick? Because there are some other sides to this proposal in addition to that, and that's gotten the most attention.
Yes. First, the president has proposed that we reward those schools that keep college affordable and shift federal aid away from colleges that don't keep their costs down or provide a good value, especially for disadvantaged students. Second, the president created new incentives to hold down costs and increase quality, including two parts, a $1 billion for a first year of Race to the Top for college affordability and higher and completion. And that's a proposal to reform in the states, to really encourage states and to find the best states in the country who do a good job for sustaining college costs. And third, we're creating a scorecard for colleges that will make it easier for families and students to compare schools and pick the college or university that's best suited to their needs, whether it's a community college, a four-year college, or any other kind of institution, one that's priced affordably and consistent with what they want to do after graduation.
And then finally... Yeah, right.
Pardon me?
No, I was going to say, there's one other. I was anticipating you. Go ahead.
Right. And so finally, we're calling on Congress to freeze interest rates on student loans so that they remain at 3.4% this year instead of doubling that to 6.8%, also making the American Opportunity Tax Credit permanent, which would support up to $10,000 for over 4 years of college, and to protect the historic increases in Pell Grants, also to double work-study, and then finally to reform campus-based aid, which is probably probably one of the most controversial parts, so that the money that we give to colleges and universities, which is called Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grants or Work Study, will go to reward schools that do a good job in providing a good value to students. So I hope that's in a nutshell.
Yeah, thank you for that. It was a good nutshell. And the Department of Education officials, which include you, are saying that they'll release information next month on how this plan will be financed as part of the budget process. I'm wondering, though, what leverage the president has on this. I mean, he's going to have to go to Congress, and you've got essentially a Republican Congress. He's also going to have to get a lot of the colleges and universities perhaps on board, isn't he?
Yeah, well, we met with the higher education associations last week with the White House and pledged to work with them to figure out, you know, what we can do to really move these proposals forward. It is a very complex set of proposals. We want to keep things simple. We hope to do all of it, but we need their help. And so we want to have the institutions working with us collaboratively in a partnership to look at ways that we can reward colleges to keep them affordable, look at what we need to do at the state level and what we could do at the institutional level. One thing the president is proposing is a first-in-the-world fund that would go directly to institutions to help institutions put in place the kinds of evidence-based strategies that will help more students get through college and use the Pell Grants and loans to get through in a more timely manner. It's really that combined with the Race to the Top for College Affordability will help us increase quality and completion, which is part of what the president would like to do.
Well, you mentioned the state, and in many people's judgment, the state cuts are really the core of the problem. President Obama challenged the states to be more responsible, but what kind of teeth can you bring to this as far as the states are concerned?
Well, you know, the Race to the Top for College Affordability and Completion, we want to use that as a competition that will spur innovation and reform. So, for example, we have a couple of examples. The state of Maryland, the state of New York, there are a bunch of states that are looking at how to make college sustainable for the middle class. And so, you know, when you look at New York, the Congress just passed, the legislature there, a maintenance of effort to actually not reduce college state funds to college any more than this year and to move forward by increasing tuition only $300 a year for the next 5 years. State of Maryland has had the first compact in place for the last 4 years. They're planning to increase tuition, but just a little bit for next year. They have not increased tuition, so they have a tremendous commitment to affordability. I think there are models around the country like that that can spur other states to do more, and we hope to reward those states and really hold them up with the bully pulpit and with the reward money that would become this competition. So we think that states have to do their part, institutions have to do their part, students themselves and families, of course, and the federal government. So I think if we all play a part in this, we can work our way through Congress and hopefully get some agreements because it's too important not to.
We're talking to Martha Cantor, who is Undersecretary of Education with the U.S. Department of Education, with us from the nation's capital. I just wonder if I get a response from you, Secretary Cantor, on, well, some of the criticism that's come down the pike, the president's plan. Some, of course, call it political theatrics in an election year. But Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, who is the former education secretary, said the federal government doesn't have any business doing this. He's made some proposals like more classes in the summer and 3-year degrees and that sort of thing. But this is, from a Republican perspective, interference from the federal government, I suppose you could call it. You say what to that?
Well, we've had, you know, a historic commitment to inspire innovation, and one of the federal funds that was most successful over more than 30 years was FIPSE, the Fund for the Improvement of Post-Secondary Education. So we look at these proposals as a mechanism to induce shared responsibility. And with our first-in-the-world competition that's being proposed, we would allow individual campuses to partner with other community groups and nonprofits to scale up the strategies that will both increase college completion and boost the kind of support that the campuses can do to redesign curricula, really tackle the remediation that students need on the front end so it doesn't end up costing more, figure out what classes students need to get through so they're not taking any class that they don't need, which would cost them time and money, those kinds of things, which will really inspire the best of what's happening in the country to be held up, and hopefully we can really use those as models for the country.
Again, Martha Cantor is Undersecretary of Education with the U.S. Department of Education, and Secretary Cantor, appreciate your being with us this morning. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Now we go to Oakland. Mark Udoff is president of the University of California. And President Udoff, good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. In fact, UC is now, as I think you said in a number of your statements, paying about a third of every tuition dollar to financial aid and over half of the pay for those with no tuition. How do you respond to this proposal the president's put forward?
Well, first I want to say Martha Cantor is a very good person. The president has a good team. We'll work with them. We'll figure this out. There are obviously three legs to the stool, and you're going to come crashing down if you don't pay attention to all three legs. And it's accessibility and price and quality, so you need all three. The second thing I want to say is exactly what you said. What the president is trying to achieve with the federal income tax, we're doing every day at the University of California. It's true the tuition is roughly $12,000, but roughly $3,500 of that is returned to the students in financial aid. And so it's highly redistributive. We could lower tuition tomorrow morning if we didn't have that commitment to our low- and middle-income students to help them attend the University of California. So no student under $80,000 who has financial need, meaning they don't own a big ranch or have a trust fund, pays any tuition. And we take care of a lot of the students between 80 and 120, and Berkeley has a plan which is even more aggressive. So I wanted to make that clear. And you're right, over half our students pay no tuition at all. So it's part of it is the redistributive function. The second thing is it's not a problem of cost. Michael, you put your finger right on it. Actually, our costs have fallen at the University of California. If you mean how much does it cost on an inflation-adjusted basis to provide a semester credit hour to a student, it's gone down in the last 10 years. We're more efficient. We have, frankly, we have somewhat larger classes. We have, cut out some things that we needed to cut out, achieve some efficiencies. What's going up is the copay, and it's. I always say it's like going to your drugstore. The insurance company decides it's paying too much money. So they say when you pick up your pharmaceutical, instead of a $10 copay, it's $20. So your cost is doubled. It does not mean the cost of the drug is doubled or even that it's going up at all. And that's what has been happening in recent decades. The state of California and 39 other states have been disinvesting in higher education. That triggers tuition increases, and those tuition increases are exacerbated by the fact that we view ourselves as being access-oriented, and roughly 35% of our students are low-income, Pell-eligible. That's astounding for a first-class research university in America.
I'm wondering also about some of the language in the proposal. I'd like to get your response, President Yudof. I mean, the president's talking about responsible tuition policies. I presume he means lower tuition or restraint of tuition growth, but that seems to be something that needs to be codified. And then he's also talking about judging value of an education by amounts of income made in the first few years, which sort of rankles some people.
Yeah, that's going to prove to be difficult to do. Again, we'll work with the president and his team. We are just beginning to acquire data on the earnings of students when they graduate. But, I mean, it's a terribly difficult thing. I mean, part of it is the market, not just the education they receive. That's going to be an issue. Part of it's the disciplines that they choose to study. That's part of it. Part of it is we want to encourage people to engage in public service. Those jobs are not always high paying. So I think, it'll be difficult to do that. Now, at UC, we have very high completion rates, so if that's one of the criteria, then I think we'll do very well on that. But these are very complex problems without a simple answer. And I certainly understand this sort of race to the top philosophy, but this whole thing would make more sense to me if there was some sort of maintenance of effort provision. I know they're hard to enforce, but if the states don't pull back over time, then it's much easier to maintain a lower tuition profile. If they're reducing their expenditures, it becomes wretchedly difficult.
It's also wretchedly difficult to judge the quality of an education in terms of effects, isn't it?
Well, I think it's, we could get into that. It's pretty single-minded. I'm a liberal arts guy, I keep a copy of Pindar's Odes usually on my desk or Wallace Stevens. I think it's good stuff, and I think it's not totally measurable by the dollars you earn when you graduate. I understand that's important. People have to live, and that's important to their families, and they want a roof over their heads. But education is also about, enlightening one about literature and the possibilities of life. And I think, for me, what's important is the cognitive skills. Whether you go to an automobile mechanic or a neurosurgeon or an accountant, someone who can solve a problem, someone who can communicate clearly, someone who can synthesize ideas. These are really critically important skills, and it's not all measurable by whether you made $42,000 or $39,000 your first couple of years out on the job market.
Talking to President Mark Yudof, who is president of the University of California. When you say, President Yudof, you're going to work with this administration, what do you mean?
Well, look, the University of Washington has less than a 10% return to aid, I'm told. When I was at Texas, they had a 20% return to aid. We're at 33%. So we have to start with some realism with the numbers that you have to ask what is the net price, net pricing, that is net of the scholarship assistance. So you can't just look at the sticker price and make comparisons there. So you need some sophistication. You also have to be careful about who you're punishing if you withdraw financial aid. You have to be very careful. The last people you want to punish are the students. That's the second thing. You have to be attentive to what the state legislatures are doing to balance their budgets in very difficult times. It's great to look at completion rates and so forth, but you have to normalize the data. You don't want to hold an institution, a community college, which has almost all low-income students and they're maybe part-time. You don't want to hold them to the same standards as Princeton. By the way, that's another issue. Do you include the privates or not?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything on that.
Well, we're going to be actually talking later on with the president of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities, so we will get that perspective as well. But please finish what you were saying.
So, this is complex stuff, and if it were easy to solve, it would have been solved long ago. And the aggregate level of tuition is only, one part of the problem. I mean, suppose we redid our system and we didn't have half the students who didn't pay any tuition at all, and we didn't have the return of dollars from the tuition to scholarship. We could artificially lower our tuition to $9,000 from $12,000, and we would have fewer opportunities for lower and middle class families. That's just the truth. The truth is, when you raise tuition, it rarely hurts the poor families because you can take care of them. It's a real difficult middle-class problem. It's the middle class that takes it on the chin.
Mark Udoff, again, is president of UC, University of California. President Udoff, appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Debbie Cochran is also with us here in studio, program director for the Institute for College Access and Success. And Debbie Cochran, when President Udoff was talking about the fact that this is not just sticker price, I think that's a really important point to emphasize, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think we have good indications that that is what the administration was actually proposing, looking at lower net tuition prices rather than just the sticker price. And that net price is really what the real cost is to students, not what the institutions charge. And I think, as President Udoff signaled, the University of California has a very robust financial aid policy in place that goes hand in hand with their tuition policy, as does the California State University system and as does the California Community College system. So I think California public colleges are really well set up for this policy.
This policy is a whole package. And as Secretary Cantor said, it's a little labyrinthine. She didn't use that word. I did, but to get through it. I'm also wondering at this point, certainly because the devil's in the details, we don't really have the details, do we?
No, we do not have the details, unfortunately. I mean, I think we as well as colleges across the country and the associations will be carefully watching out for them and weighing in as appropriate. But I think what the president really did last week was to take really important steps in terms of laying out a blueprint of a set of options that really signals the shared responsibility that we all have in terms of increasing college affordability. Something for states, something for colleges, even something for students and families.
But he's also laid out a kind of blueprint in terms of a college scorecard. There's a good deal of skepticism about this. Is this a good idea? And where does one find access to all this data to begin with?
Well, I think that's actually the key question right now. We don't know where students and consumers would find that data if they want it. So giving students and families better information to enable them to make the college decisions that they want to make and they need to make is really important. So what the president has proposed is laying out some of those key pieces of information in a really clear and comparable way. So students can make the best decisions that they can when they're, making decisions about one of the biggest investments they will make in their lives.
How to control cost hikes, though? I mean, that's really the bottom line here. I hate to use that term, bottom line, but that's really what we're facing here. And in many instances, just don't know, especially in California, where the state is concerned.
Well, I think that is one of the areas where we're going to really have to wait and see what the details say. I think it's not just about the cost hikes themselves, but really looking at that net price or the real cost to students. So understandably, tuition may go up, but if colleges have robust financial aid policies in place to help students cover those costs, then they may be just fine. We'll have to wait and see what the details say.
Well, there are some details. The president was talking about doubling the work study jobs, and also expending more money to be available for things like Perkins loans and Pell grants. I mean, there are some real specifics here that certainly speak to the possibility of a lot more help along the way. Again, if he can get Congress behind him, though, and that's a big if.
Certainly that is a big if. But I think, you know, when people do talk about the risks of, you know, of reallocating some of the aid, I think what you just highlighted is a really important point, that they are actually proposing increases in two of the campus-based aid programs that may be reallocated. So I think when you're talking about new money being added into the pot of money that already exists, it's easy to see how that might actually be done in a way that minimizes any harm or sudden reductions in aid.
Talking to Debbie Cochran, who is Program Director of the Institute for College Access and Success, and interested in finding out, of course, your reactions to the president's proposal. College students who are listening, or parents of college students, or administrators and university faculty, or just people who are interested in this whole process. I mean, the central linchpin of this is, as we've been saying, that tuition ought to be approached in a carrot and stick way by the administration with the kind of money that they have available. And those who keep tuition at a certain level will be rewarded, and those who continue to hike tuition up and make it more remote from the possibilities, especially for middle-class families or families who can't afford, are those who are going to be finding themselves essentially punished. What do you think about this, and what do you think about the idea of performance funding for a portion of federal spending? Because that, too, is a part of this program. And we welcome your involvement in the program and invite you to join the conversation. Our toll-free number available right now to you is 866-733-6786. And don't feel necessarily like if you're outside of California, that this is not a conversation that you should join, because it certainly goes across the map. So if you're listening to us on Sirius or however you're listening to us on the internet, feel free to join the program as well. Again, it's toll free, 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments or questions into us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. You can also post questions or comments on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And there's, of course, another way to communicate with us, and that is by Facebook. Go to our Facebook page. And if you haven't been to the Facebook page, it's worth going to and joining up with our Facebook page, becoming one of our Facebook members. Martha Kantner, we spoke to earlier, Undersecretary of Education with the U.S. Department of Education. Mark Udoff, President of the University of California. Debbie Cochran, Program Director of the Institute for College Access and Success. We're also going to talk with Kristen Soares, who is president, I mentioned this to Mark Udoff, of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities, and talk with a student as well before this hour is over. Christopher Prado is student body president of CSU in the East Bay. He's a senior, and he's majoring in political science, and he, too, certainly has some strong sentiments about this, as you may. And if you do, then by all means, feel free to join the program. Debbie Cochran, on the whole, though, you're pretty optimistic about this. I mean, in terms of laying out a foundation or a blueprint, if it can get congressional approval.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the fact that he is focused on net cost rather than the sticker price, and I think makes a lot of sense. The fact that he is clearly signaling to schools that, you know, they have a role to play is very important.
Well, it is important indeed, and we'll find out what you, our listeners, think as soon as we come back from a brief break here. Again, talking about President Obama's message to colleges, perpetual tuition hikes are no longer an option, at least as far as the president is concerned. He promised to reward those colleges who hold the line on tuition increases and told college administrators that if they don't, then federal funding will decrease. We'll hear from you, our listeners, when we return. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing President Obama's proposal, which was laid out by the president last Friday, talking about tuition raises and how they ought to be, well, tied to federal funding. That is, if tuition is raised, federal funding will not necessarily be as available. And if administrators and college and university presidents and the like are able to hold the line, so to speak, where tuition raises are concerned, or bring them down, then the federal government will reward them. As I said, it's a basic carrot and stick, and there's much more to this proposal that we've been discussing and trying to outline here for you. Martha Kanner joined us at the top of the program, Undersecretary of Education with the U.S. Department of Education. We also spoke with President Mark Udoff at the University of California, and Debbie Cochrane is here with us in studio, Program Director of the Institute for College Access and Success. And, of course, we want to hear from you. I had mentioned, though, to President Udoff and that we were going to talk to somebody from the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities, the AICCU. And that president is Kristen Soares, who is with us from Washington. And thank you for joining us, Kristen Soares.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, glad to have you. I'm interested in hearing what the attitude is from the private and universities that you represent. You're going to be meeting in D.C. about this tuition plan. What's your attitude going into it?
We're meeting right now, and I represent the 74 nonprofit independent colleges and universities in California. And there is a lot of concern, a lot of appreciation for the president bringing this forward, the blueprint.
Concern about mainly regulation?
About regulation, some of the proposals that are in there, which would be incentive programs tied to student financial aid. You sound really good, but how those programs get implemented, of course, is what we care about. One of them being race to the top, and we know the race to the top for education reform for K-12. It took California 3 attempts until it finally succeeded in getting a grant successful in that type of competition. And what's a result here is student financial aid. And so we want to work really closely with the president and administration on ensuring that our students still have access to financial aid.
So you're entering this with some skepticism, but willing certainly to work with the administration. What ways do you see yourselves working with the administration?
Well, what we already, are encouraged by is that he put forward net tuition, and some of your previous callers' discussants talked about that. And the fact that he really understands that net tuition, that price that students and families actually pay for their college, they get that, and that's really important because what we know is what families pay is not that sticker tuition, it's that net tuition. And that allows us to have that pot of student financial aid money. So we're going to work with them on that. Certainly want to work with them on these programs and how they get implemented. Mark Udoff talked about the state disinvestment in higher education funding. Well, there's also been a disinvestment in Cal Grant funding or student aid funding. And all of these sources need to come together to support the neediest families and really keep access available for low-income, disadvantaged families.
And again,
so we're really focused on keeping up that front and center.
Kristen Soares is president of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities. We're going to go to your calls here. Let me read some comments that are coming through on the web and on email. And again, you can put your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or email us, forum@kqed.org. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786. And here's a web comment. As taxpayers and states withdraw support from public institutions, colleges have no choice but to raise tuition. The federal government wants to punish them for that? Makes no sense. Here's Ken, who says, I wish you could have asked Dr. Udoff why UC full professors don't teach more. I love the UC system. We need to raise taxes to support UC. But eventually, don't we also have to evolve away from the highly stratified academic culture of stratospheric paychecks for research faculty who barely teach, supported by an underclass of poorly paid lecturers, TAs, and classified staff? Isn't that one of the elephants in the room? Web comment. Whether the president's proposal is, whatever the president's proposal is, it won't get enacted and it won't solve the real problem, a teaching system that is very labor-intensive, thousands of years old, and based on the ancient fact that one too many lecturing was the cheapest way of copying information, not the best way. Now, with the internet and software, it's time to figure out new ways for people to learn. The UC and other elite universities should be leading the way, but in fact are moving as slowly as they can. Their best effort is to video the traditional lecture and offer it online without credit. Big deal. The community colleges do that and offer credit. And another web comment. Universities are fighting hard to stay at the top of the ranking scale. That means bringing in new faculty focused on newer research topics and getting as much research grants as possible. However, these new faculty members try to get tenured by publishing as many papers as possible during their first 6 years and are not interested in teaching. Meanwhile, many of the older tenured professors are not interested in teaching, probably because they are distinguished in some way. Undergraduate students are often forced to pay for this waste and overstaffing. A bit generalizing there, to be sure, about faculty, but goes with the territory here. And speaking of the territory, let's find out what you have to say on the telephones. Heather from Berkeley is our first caller. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for having me, Michael. Thank you. I just wanted to quickly tell my story. I was listening to you interviewing Mark Udoff, and I was a student at Berkeley up until last year when I graduated. I actually had to leave a semester early for financial reasons. I come from a middle-class family. I was lucky enough to be in a merit-based scholarship program, but I received absolutely no aid from the school. I was lucky enough to be able to opt out of things like student health care, and I lived in a cooperative, which helped with my costs, but I was barely able to leave without incurring debt. So it pains me when I hear administrators talk about the pain of cuts and about state disinvestment, when I really feel there's more that could be done on a school-by-school basis to help especially middle-class students who are feeling the pinch.
All right. I'm glad you told your tale, and I thank you for it. And we'll go to another caller. We'll go to Erica, who's joining us from San Jose. Erica, welcome.
Thank you. I was calling to ask about what I think about is perverse economic incentives, or the fact that these incentives that the federal government has come up with, while they seem like a good idea on the surface, might have the unintended consequence of prompting states to further reduce funding for higher education. For instance, if the UC system or the CSU system was awarded some race to the top money under the federal program, might not the California legislature think, okay, our UC system has more money, we have to cut our state budget somewhere, let's cut higher ed one more time?
Debbie Cochran, some thoughts on that? I mean, certainly there was there was thoughts along those lines when the lottery came into the picture. It didn't yield quite the revenue that people thought it would, but there was a sense that, well, maybe education is getting more money and they don't need money from the state as much as they did before. They're getting it from the lottery.
Well, you know, I think this is one of those areas where we're going to have to wait and see what the details are. What we've seen so far does signal that they do, you know, any sort of state that would be awarded race to the top funds would have an expectation of maintaining some level of, you know, some sufficient level of funding for higher education. So I think, you know, we'll have to watch and see how that gets implemented. But I think we should assume that the administration is aware of that concern.
And Erica, appreciate your call. Thank you for that. Here's Chris from Sacramento who wants to talk about Pell Grants. Chris, hi.
Oh, hi. Yes, I just wanted to tell a similar story. I came from a family, a single family mom, three kids, and I graduated early. And I graduated when I was 17. And so from high school, I went to a two-year college, and I applied for I applied for the Pell Grant, the Ball Grant, the Cal Grant C, and because my mom made, you know, middle income money, they were going to charge me all this tuition and everything. So I opted out to wait for a year, and then I reapplied after I was 18, and I was on my own, obviously, and I wasn't under my mom's tax bracket. And I worked for the school. I found great programs. I've got a scholarship from NOW. I mean, I did everything, just like that movie, Good Will Hunting. I mopped floors, like loaded art supplies, but it was really tough for me to get in that way. And it was being coming from that middle income, it's almost like they're blocking you. But it's almost easier to be of a lower income bracket to get these grants. But, you know, just because I'm not living off my mom's income, you know, I'm an independent person now that I'm 18, but they were still using her income to say I couldn't get these grants. And I challenged the board, and I worked for the school, and I'm very happy that I did that.
Chris, I'm also happy it worked out for you. It's often the case that when we talk about college and university costs, the middle class is singled out as the ones who really, well, bear the toughest road to hoe for many reasons, but particularly for the reasons that a certain amount of income, Debbie Cochran, disentitles you. That's not probably no such word, but makes you not eligible for the kind of grants that are available out there.
Well, you know, I think there are different types of financial aid that are available to different students at different income levels. I think what's important about what the president proposed is, you know, aside from these campus-based aid programs that might be reallocated, he did propose an increase in the federal Pell Grant from $55.50 to $56.35, which is very important. He also proposed making the American Opportunity Tax Credit to permanent. And that's something, a tax credit that helps both low and middle income families. So that's a really important step as well.
Well, I thought we'd bring a student voice into this. Christopher Prado, a student body president of Cal State University East Bay. He's also a senior majoring in political science. Christopher Prado, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Michael. Appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you with us. Well, from your perspective, this looks pretty good, huh?
I mean, we're really appreciative that I think as students from the CSU, the UC level, that the president mentioned tuition increases in his State of the Union address. I think it's at least the future looks indicative that in the presidential elections that this is going to be an issue that's going to be focused on. That's always necessary. But we do think that one of the things that the president mentioned about moving, since we're on the topic of student aid, he did mention kind of vaguely and ambiguously that he's going to reform student aid to move away from institutions that do not meet affordability and value. And what he's referring to there is the for-profit institutions that in the state of California, and I think nationally, that really profit off of and exploit students that might better be served by the CSU and UC system. I think a statistic that even the U.S. Department of Education has that students at for-profit institutions represent 12% of all higher education students, where they get 26% of all student loans and 46% of all student loan dollars in default. So I do think that that's where the president's going in that direction, and that that Pell Grant and federal aid money could be better served at the CSU and UC system, and hold those for-profit institutions more accountable for really what we think is exploiting their students. I mean, these are points that we bring up when we lobby in D.C., especially when Pell Grants were getting at least decreased at the federal level by Congress.
Well, you're talking about the federal level, but I know on the state level you'd like to lock in the state budget so as not to have underfunding. But
exactly. So
yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If I could speak briefly to those points as well. I mean, we do believe the root of this problem is, you know, just a perilous placement of priorities by the state legislature. I think that's indicative of last year's budget by the state legislature, where UC and the CSU got funded $5.7 billion, while prisons got funded $9.6 billion. That was reported by the Bay Citizen. And this is just a reoccurring issue within the state of California in the last several years or so. So as students, we like the fact that President Obama did mention in the State of Union that he did want to hold state legislatures more accountable in that sense.
Well, there's also the whole question here of what colleges and universities prepare students for. And I know you, like President Udoff, and like many students, feel what's important are, well, critical thinking, social issues, citizenship, being change agents, all that, as opposed to preparing you for the marketplace. But you're going to be judged to some extent probably on just how prepared you are for the marketplace and how successful you are in this proposal.
I think to a certain extent, but we really do value the freedom that the college education gives us, like you mentioned, and we don't, as students, really want to be constrained by the marketplace and allow that to dictate our prospects. I wasn't sure exactly where that might have been mentioned in Obama's tuition plan, but generally, like I said, we feel that, you know, the state legislature just doesn't respect higher education at the K-12 level and at the CSU and UC level. So I think we enjoy the focus it's placing on them. To speak more to accountability of administrators on campus, I think definitely there's certain initiatives that one of the callers may have mentioned on campus that we might be able to look to that might help a little bit, but generally the focus and primarily the state legislature doesn't respect us at all. And I think if we really want to grab the root of this issue, we have to place pressure on the state legislatures. And I think that was the president's intention when he mentioned them in the State of the Union and then at the University of Michigan on Friday.
Yeah, but like I asked the Undersecretary of Education, where's the teeth from the president with the state legislatures?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, Christopher Prado, again, a student body president of CSU East Bay and a senior who is majoring in political science.
Stay with us, if you would, Christopher. We'll take some calls, and there may be some comments directed to you. I want to direct a question back to Kristen Soares, who's with us again from Washington, president of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities. I wonder, you know, we heard President Udoff talk about how liberal arts education ought to not necessarily prepare students, or the expectation shouldn't be that it's going to prepare students for a big income or anything in the way of vocation, but prepare students for life maybe and for, well, citizenship, critical thinking, the things that I was talking about before. How do you view that whole question, and particularly the role of the federal government, which is trying to shape maybe? Is this, again, a concern to you with regulation?
Concern, really difficult to gauge, you know, success of a graduate and where they work, and every graduate goes on to different pathways. And I think what President Udoff was saying is that we want to prepare students for a variety of fields that are important to our workforce and our economy and to our social structure. So very concerned about that. I mean, as educators, we want to train the whole student and prepare them for the critical thinking, to be able to go into a situation and resolve it. And those are the most important skills, and that's what we really need to focus on, preparation.
I'm going to bring more of our callers into this discussion. Becky, thank you for waiting. Join us. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. As a parent of high school students and someone who lives in the Bay Area making $150,000, I don't think we're eligible for many of these programs. And I would like to question the wisdom of having a sticker price for tuition that is essentially 50% more than the actual cost. And isn't that really taxing those people who have children in college to support the tuition fund instead of spreading the burden across the entire state?
Debbie Cochran.
You know, I think there are certainly reasonable people disagree about how to set tuition and aid policies. I think it makes sense to charge, for families that are coming from very low income backgrounds or very disadvantaged backgrounds, who really can't afford to contribute to college costs at all, to be able to provide more support to help them.
Let me thank her for the call and go into some of your emails and responses here. Here's Cannoli, who writes, we don't force drivers to take out personal mortgages to pay for earthquake retrofits to the Bay Bridge, and we don't make sports lovers take out personal loans to pay for a new stadium. Yet our relation to education dumps the cost on students in exactly this way. When I went to UC, there was no tuition, and scholarships for housing, books, and living costs were needed. Are we doing anything to adjust our underlying relationship to educating our youth? Seems to me that the problem is at this level, not with whether this proposal or that will do the trick. If we are committed, accessible education to everyone, we'll find a way. If we aren't, we won't. And Tony writes, the threat of stop or I'll shoot myself only works when others want you to live. UC and Cal State budgets raise their tuitions because the state has removed funding. A privatized everything governor could use budget cuts to trigger further defunding. Having said this, universities have spent a lot of money in the last 10 years on sports arenas, gyms, and expensive administrations. Peter in San Carlos writes, why are grant overhead so high? In the interest of saving taxpayer money, why in the world does the federal government even allow the universities to negotiate their overhead rates instead of dictating a flat rate? And another listener writes, where is a student loan reform? I have loans consolidated through Sallie Mae at a fixed 8%. Why can I not refinance those loans at lower rates as homeowners can their mortgages? Doesn't that just make sense, especially given how a more educated adult helps the U.S. compete globally, as our president urges? How is someone buying real estate for themselves a greater good to society? On we go to more of your calls. From Davis, Jack, you're on.
I just wanted to put in perspective to some of your listeners who might not understand that I graduated from UC Davis's graduate program in 1980 and was paying $247 a quarter. And now I think that they're paying upwards of $4,000 a quarter. And I just think that these fees are way over what they should be.
Okay. I thank you, Jack, for that call. And let me go back to you, Christopher Prado. Again, you really feel that the emphasis should be on the state, and what do you think the president could do to push the state, or ought to do to push the state?
Well, I mean, one of the things we could do at the federal level is potentially have maybe a broader piece of legislation that sets a certain a certain percentage of funds that's mandated at the federal level that has to be provided to higher education and even K-12 education in the state. I mean, that's one thing I could do. I think it's a good start that he mentioned it in the State of the Union once again. So hopefully we have even, you know, the top intellectuals around the country kind of discussing this issue as we're on the brink of the presidential elections. I think that's one simple initiative that he could propose. But definitely we look for the president to continue to keep taking the charge and be a champion for higher education.
And Debbie Cochran, listener, says Pell Grant increased $5,550 to $5,635. Did I hear that correctly? Wow, a whole $85?
I will say for most of the, you know, students who are receiving federal Pell Grants are still much more likely to borrow than students who don't. So they have a tremendous amount of need. Any increase counts. Well, certainly much more needs to be done, but we are very appreciative that the president continues to move in this direction.
And here's Jonathan, who writes, "It pains me to hear some of your correspondents complaining about professors' salaries, teaching loads, and the like. I am one of those underpaid teaching aides, a current grad student at UCB. University and my department have been very generous to me and many other students in my program, supporting us financially and with professors being ever present, and yes, teaching undergraduate and graduate courses. There is profound waste at the UC system, but the overpayments certainly are not going to professors, young or old." And you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Debbie Cochran of the Institute for College Access and Success, Kristen Soares from the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities, and Christopher Prado, CSU East Bay Student Body President. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another call. If I can find the phone line. Oh, there we go. George in San Jose. Hi, you're on.
Good morning. It seems like universities located in higher cost of living areas will be punished by this policy. For example, University of California at Berkeley, to take a faculty position there, you're going to be looking at a much higher cost of living in terms of residential costs, et cetera, compared to if you were teaching at University of Iowa. If you hire better faculty like UC Berkeley does, Nobel laureates and the like, they command higher salaries, and it doesn't seem like a good policy to hire less accomplished faculty. That looks like a race to the bottom rather than a race to the top.
Okay, I thank you for your comment. What about the race to the top as you see it, Kristen Soares?
I think the caller just talked about is the whole issue of quality, which is what we really need to be focused on in this whole discussion. The fact of the matter is it does cost more to provide an education. I mean, everything costs more in the last 10 years, and so tuition has actually dropped in the last five-year period. The quality going forward and the size of classes and who instructs the classes, is it full-time faculty or adjunct faculty? These are considerations, and if we have a lot of downward pressure to keep down costs, which we're very mindful of, something has to give, and it could be those bigger classes where you have a much different learning environment. I think we can all remember the big class with 400 people that you snuck in and could sit in the very back and eat a bag of Doritos and sneak out early. But when you had that small class, you got there on time. You would not have walked out early. You knew your instructor. So we really need to focus, you know, going forward on what the educational experience needs to be.
Nice plug for Doritos.
Could have been something else.
I'm also wondering, when you talk about over five years, tuition going down, actually tuition and fees rose 8.3% this year. I think that may have been part of the catalyst of what prompted President Obama's speech and getting his proposal out there. Although, as I said earlier, there are those skeptics who say this is a political season and education is a good thing to back for a president. Because he's going to need congressional approval for this. Let me go to a caller. Chris, hi, you're on.
Yes, Michael, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not a pie-eyed idealist, but let me just say that there are good-intentioned people working on this problem, but all of this we've been discussing today is just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, if I might use that old phrase there, because this is a big lie. This is all about money. It's not about education. It is about money, and it is part of a larger strategy, corporate, Republican, conservative strategy towards privatization. We raise these tuitions. We strangle the budgets. And guess what? People are going to be driven to financial institutions to take out huge loans. For what? Where are these jobs that everybody's being trained for? We've got an epidemic of college-educated people working at Starbucks and living at their parents' home. This is a big lie. The money is there. If we took the hundreds of millions being spent on top-secret America and the wars, 1 year's worth of that, we would solve all of this. All of this detail about, oh, we need a few hundred million from here and here and here, that is all a big lie. And if people won't look at that, then they're either have their head in their sand or they're being disingenuous.
All right, Chris, you want to respond to that, Debbie? Debbie Cochran?
You know, I think the question of value is really important, and a number of your callers have touched on it. I also think no matter, you know, how many billions of dollars you're talking about, focusing federal dollars where where students are best being served makes sense.
Well, we've come to the end of the hour, and I think we certainly have had a pretty good look at what the president is proposing. Again, the devil is in the details, and the other devil is in whether or not this can get through Congress. But I want to extend thanks to all who participated. Martha Kanner, Undersecretary of Education, Mark Udoff, President of University of California, Debbie Cochran here in studio, Program Director of the Institute for College Access and Success, and Kristen Soares, the President of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities, and Christopher Prado, Student Body President of CSU East Bay. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Another hour of Forum up ahead. We're going to find out about rural California in the hour ahead. The Never the Twain Shall Meet, rural and urban California. Well, the whole campaign to make those of you who live in urban California learn more about rural California. We'll find out about that in the next hour. In the meantime, I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.